Hello, hello. How's everybody doing? Let's see here. Last time I talked to you, I was single. I am now married. Thank you very much. Had a hell of a wedding and a lot of fun, a lot of friends, and nothing traditional about the wedding whatsoever. We had commentary from the people watching the ceremony. We had commentary from the best man. Everybody's kind of heckling each other. It was a good time. It was one for the books. And then something happened that you've never, ever heard before. I honeymooned in Arkansas. Yeah, you heard that right. So this is how it went down. Last year, my buddy sends me a 4th of July video, and he had spent all day wiring fireworks. And so he goes, I had a 30-minute show. And I said, you had a 30-minute fireworks show in your backyard? He goes, yep. I said, I'm coming to Arkansas for the 4th. Well, it just so happened that our wedding happened to be the week before. And so I looked at my wife, and I said, Jeannie, what do you want to do? And she goes, oh, we made a deal. We're going to Arkansas. So the whole joke throughout the last 2 months is we're honeymooning in Arkansas. But we went out there. We had a blast. We rented a boat for one day, jumped off some cliffs. I think the highest cliff was 35 feet. We wrestled. We played football. And the only thing that took me out, and you can see it right here on the side of my arm, it's healing right now, is a slide. Now, I went down a 6-foot plastic slide, and my arm caught, and it gave me a rug burn all the way down. So there's the joys of getting old. You can still play football, but don't go down a slide. I don't know. But fun, all in fun. But while I was at the wedding, I got to get reacquainted with somebody that I love what she does. She's a natural. She has the understanding of put in the work, put in the effort, and the success is going to come. It's not something where I worked for 5 minutes, so where's all my money? And I begged her to come back on the show, and she said, yes, I will gladly be a part of this. So Krista Graham, thank you very much for being on the podcast and being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you are in the realtor world, real estate, you know, everything. Yes. And residential and anything else is just residential right now, or
my business partner is a developer and in commercial as well. I mainly focus on residential.
Okay, but the commercial side's there as well.
And correct.
You,
yeah,
you have those avenues if need be to work through that.
Absolutely.
I love it. So I met you, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago, through Jeannie, and you guys were looking for a house for her to purchase, and kind of, you know, poking and prodding, seeing what she could do and what she can figure out. And what always amazed me is every day you had a couple new listings that you'd always send her. And then right after you sent them to her, she would go, not for this reason, yes for this reason, no for this reason. You said, no problem. And the next week you had funneled that filter down to exactly what she was after, to the point it was almost a home run. Every house was like, this could work. Boom, this could work. This could work. And I'm not going to lie, your world of real estate and realtors, it's something to be desired. You know, there's not a lot of good ones out there. And so, when you find one that shines, you know, you grab them, you hold them tight. You're like, you're my realtor. It's nothing else here because it's so well. Talk to me about your world and your industry here in real estate.
Yes. Well, you know, again, everybody's going to have their opinion on real estate. You know, I'm sure everybody has a good story about a realtor as much as they have a unfortunate negative story. And then that was kind of one of the reasons I got into it, is people say usually get into it because of one of two reasons. You either had a wonderful experience with somebody who made you want to get into it, or you had a terrible experience and realized that, hey, I think I can do this better. So for me, luckily, my husband and I purchased our first house back in 2012, and our agent was wonderful. And I had already been interested in real estate, having a background. My dad was a general contractor. So the passion was already there, but really seeing that, I just realized, I was like, this is an industry that I want to be part of. And I want to make sure that I can give my clients an experience like we had.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it on that one. But at the end of the day, real estate was kind of in your blood, is what it sounds like. You had, your dad was a GC. It was kind of in that world. Talk to me more about that.
Yeah, I just, I'm an only child. So I spent a lot of my summers, you know, back in the 90s, he's just kind of like, okay, grab your bike. We're going to this house. I'm building a 2-story or whatever he was working on. And I just found myself just having so much passion. And, you know, I love the architecture of the buildings, and I'd always be bugging him, you know, asking like, well, why do you do this? And how did you structure this? And how'd you come to this decision? And I just kind of always was interested in it. Even I remember being in kindergarten, first grade, and going to sleepovers. And I remember everybody's playing with dolls. And, you know, I was like, wow, this is a beautiful home. Like the staircase is like, you know, and I just found myself, which I didn't think is weird at the time, but, you know, looking back in hindsight, it was kind of like, I think the natural passion's always been there.
Okay. I like that.
It was just kind of always there. But again, there's always people in your ear. And, you know, I've heard, you know, you don't want to do this. You want to be available for your kids, for soccer games, for Saturdays. And, you know, you don't want to work nights and you don't want to do this. And so I believed a lot of that for a while. So my journey, I started my classes at 22, but I didn't end up actually moving forward with it until 27. I kind of did some other jobs in the meantime. And then I just felt where I was like, it's always this burning desire where I'm like, you know what? I want to try it. And if I fail, I'd rather, you know I tried and gave mm-hmm. it my best than just kind of always wonder what if.
No, good for you on that one. You know, it's so funny. You watch a lot of the society, and I'm not going to stamp a Generation X or whatnot on just across the board, all of our society. They're so fast to give up. And it's so fast to go, oh, I've been doing this for 10 minutes. It didn't work. Oh, woe is me. Let's go try something else. And they don't realize that the success is created years, decades after all the hard work is put in. You know, it's nuts. I mean, people look at my Square Coil, the software company, all the time. And they go, oh, you're so lucky you own a software company. You have no idea the amount of work I put in that for the last decade, 10 years plus before it came to something. So it is kind of something for you to be as good as you're doing. I'm now hearing, as a child, you were bred into it, literally. Here's his architecture. Here's this. I'm gonna poke fun at you here. Fireplace in the master bedroom? Yes, no.
I mean, personally, I'd love one. Okay. But, you know, it's all subjective.
But architecture on it? Because I always laugh. Some designers hate it. Some love it. And I'm like, okay, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of fireplace. Even though being a San Diego native, that's you know, we don't get to actually use it that much, but. It's beautiful. And if you got space for it, why not?
Yep. No, very true. Going back to, you got into it at 22 and then you didn't pull a trigger until 27. For those 5 years, you listened to all the naysayers, pretty much, if I could say that. And you say, oh, it's too hard, it's too difficult. We've all gone through that at some point in time. I mean, every Absolutely. Person on the planet has gone through that. But they got you pretty good. 5 years is a pretty long time. Walk me through what finally got you over that hurdle to say, no, I'm doing this.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So again, I had started my classes, I completed it, and then it was just, you know, while you're doing it, you're obviously not getting paid for the training and everybody's got bills to pay. So I had just found myself I was actually waitressing. I had always been in customer service based jobs. So I had been a waitress. I had started with after school day program for children. And then I had gotten into waitressing, really loved it. And then I ended up tearing my meniscus in the restaurant. I worked at Dave & Buster's. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really large facility. So it got to the point where I just couldn't physically do it while I was healing. So I ended up getting into a job with home health. And so again, I'm kind of like all over the place, but I always was open to experiences and really just it was a fit at the time and then just kind of learning about that. But I felt like I'm so competitive and passionate that I was like, you know, I don't really know much about this, but I'm going to give it my all. I succeeded in that. And then I was in that for about four years. And then I had also worked with special ed in between right before then. So again, I kind of had like floated all over the place, but ultimately, actually my sister-in-law was friends with a woman who we would just spend quality time as friends and at the house together. And then she was a realtor. And what really struck the chord for me was I was kind of at a place where I was like, I'm not feeling fulfilled here. I feel like I'm missing something. And it was always on the back burner, but I had never really lost the love for it. I just, again, had kind of listened to everybody else and figured maybe this wasn't what I meant to do. And then just seeing the woman's passion for real estate, I was like, I have that. And she was excelling and she was doing so well and she was following her passion that I think it was just one of those pivotal moments where it's like, I'm not going to spend another day not going after what I want. And mm-hmm. I basically told her the next day after I saw her, I said, this is what I want to do. I already have my classes. I'm going to give it another shot. I'm going to get my license. And as soon as I do, I'm going to quit my job. And, you know, when you're getting excited about things, I think people kind of like, okay, yeah, you know, I'm sure we've all heard this before, but let's see. But I knew in my heart, I'm like, I know when I put my mind to something, like I'm going to see it through. So for me, it was I just started my class or I applied for my test the day I passed my test, the next day I quit my job. And I said, I just quit my job. When can I join your team? And I joined her team the following week. So
talk about burning your bridges. Yeah. Burn your ships. Yeah. You have no choice. We're only going this direction. You have
no plan B.
No plan. You know, that's kind of the best way in a lot of ways. If there is no plan B, you have to put all your effort into it.
Yep.
If you put all your effort into it, more than likely, it's going to be a win. It's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen the first time, you learn, you pivot, and then you win again. Like, so many people have plans B, C, and D, and I'm like, you put so much energy into backup plans. It never really – now plan A is getting, like, half the love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. And I empathize for people that have it, because when you are hearing that – I mean, real estate in particular is a 90% failure rate. And so when you hear that, you know you're already going up against the odds. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, when I'm hanging out in a group of friends, I think out of my 10 closest girlfriends, 3 of us are realtors. So there's so many negative stories you can tell yourself of, like, well, why would they choose me over somebody else? Or, but that's really going into it. And it's taken time, you know, because at the beginning you're self-doubting, you don't understand, you want everybody to take a chance. You kind of think when you get in, you're like, here I am, everybody. And then everyone's going to be like, here's some listings. And then it's like, it's a rude awakening that is the farthest thing from the truth. I mean, I love my parents to death, but even my mom's like, well, we wouldn't use you right now. You know, you don't have the experience. So really kind of getting the hard knocks of really realizing that it's like, you are up against all odds, but on the other side of that, pushing through it's the best, because not only like nobody did this for me. Mm-hmm. I have taken the punches, and I really don't consider success on the things that go right, but how many times I can get up after things go wrong.
I love it. That was great. Just right off there of the bat. We're going to get knocked down. There's no doubt. Walk me through how'd you get your first listing? Do you remember?
Yes. So my first listing, this was about 8 years ago. It was a friend's, parents. So they said, hey, we're looking to sell. We've been in our place for about 20 to 25 years. And they said, we're looking to purchase, and they were in San Carlos, and then they were moving to Ramona. So I got an opportunity. The house was less than ideal. It needed a lot of upgrades, a lot of things that were done kind of, on their own, not permitted, you know. So again, I'm walking into something. I was so appreciative, and I knew that I had the work ethic. Mm-hmm. And then it was definitely challenging. It was definitely challenging, I'll say that. But what I did too is just trying to pivot. And again, it's like, it's the school of hard knocks. So when I realized that, I was like, okay, there are things that I don't know. This is kind of a little bit more outside my scope. I brought in another agent, and it took about a year. This is not when the market, you know, if who's ever listening to this is familiar with the pandemic market. It was not, you put a sale or a sign in the yard and it sold. I mean, this was heavy duty marketing. This was 15 to 20 open houses. This was just not the same market that we've seen over the last couple of years. So really doing my best, but not having the knowledge, it was terrifying. But it's also like, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And I think just enlisting the help of others and knowing that it's like, you just have to try harder and think smarter, and some of the stuff's going to work and some of it's not.
So having this 5 years of doubt, getting out there, getting your license, when that first listing closed, how stoked were you?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, you feel like it's like, okay, because when you don't, it's hard when you don't see something come to fruition and you're like, did I? And then again, it's all those doubts. They play. I mean, still even to this day, 8 years in, those doubts still pop up. But it was of just seeing it come to fruition, not giving up. That really was like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. And then the next day you go get kicked in the face again. And sometimes you're like, okay, maybe I can't do this. But then you're like, but it's just every single notch in the belt. It was every single thing I did where I was like, now I know more about open houses. What lesson? And I really, even again, 8 years in, I always ask myself, what's the lesson I learned from this? Even if it just was an absolute slam dunk, it's taking a step back and saying, where could I have done better? And, you know, again, even if I knocked out of the park, of like, why did I knock it out of the park? Was it the knowledge because of the things that I just spent the last 6 months learning about? And now it just made that flow. Now I need to scale that. So it's really just always kind of analyzing this, like, you want to go gung-ho and you accelerate and you do what you want to do and you are there for your clients. You do the best job possible. And then it's kind of the quick pause of one, having gratitude for the fact that out of 28,000 agents in San Diego, why did they choose me? Mm-hmm. And this is why I have to give 110%, because there are 15 other people behind me that are willing to do this, but then really to just look forward and say, what did I learn from this so that I can keep growing and keep helping people?
I, for the most part, I've always had bad realtors. And it may be because I know the industry well enough and I know what's going on. So when I see them slip up, I'm like, okay, that's strike one. I see them slip up again, strike two, strike three. Okay, you suck. Now I got to take this over. This is your job. What's going on? And I've always had a love for you because you were always on point and you're always dialed in. Now, the couple deals that you and I have worked on together, none of them came to fruition, ironically. But it was fun because, you know, I have my forever home. I'm not going anywhere. But there's always investments. And it's so neat because for the most part, that's people's goal. That's people's end goal. I get a job, I get my house, and then I get enough money and I get rental incomes. And now something's appreciating asset while it's paying me. This is the, you know, the holy grail of winning in life. And you're on the inside. You get to see this day in and day out. What's the difference between people that are buying their primary residence for people that are buying investments?
Great question. I think it really just comes down to, with a residential sale, when you're thinking about bringing your family into something, or this is the first and you just spent the last 5 years saving up to get into a house, it's just going to be a lot more emotional. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I really work. I prefer residential for that reason, is because I understand the emotional side of it, where, again, my business partner is a developer. It's just a lot less emotion. And for me, it's when you combat more of a commercial type agent with a residential transaction, it usually tends to clash. That's what I found, is just because it is, they're going to be more numbers driven. They're doing this as an investment. It's about the numbers, what makes sense long run. And then with a family, it's, can I picture my kids playing out here? Mm-hmm. I want to build a pool back here so I can spend my summers, because I never got to grow up with a pool. So that for me is a lot more fulfilling in that sense, just because I want to be that agent that has these clients for the rest of their life. So when I'm working with first-time homebuyers, there's some agents that prefer not to, just because it is a lot more hand-holding. There's a lot more questions involved. For me, I view it that I want this relationship to end. I want to really just be forever. Mm-hmm. I want to help them get into their first house. And then when they outgrow it because they have two children, now we're going to do their move up. And now if their parents pass, I want to help them or their parents downsize, whatever that is. I want it to be really a lifelong thing. So that's how I personally structure my business.
I love it. So with that being said, what marketing do you do above and beyond? Hey, don't forget about me. How are you still top of the mind awareness for that client without being pushy?
It is a balance. Right. Because like you said, you've worked with agents you don't like before. And most people, I mean, it's, look at us as consumers. I hate getting spam calls. I hate when people are showing up at my door. And so it is a fine balance. And it's something that can be tweaked. For me personally, I just prefer face-to-face. Mm-hmm. I love events. I am blessed because I'm a native here. I'm able to host parties, do community events in parks, have food trucks come. I really want to be face-to-face. I want to be meeting mom and dad. I want to be staying in touch with the kids. I want to see people running around in the park. We're drinking beer. We're kind of shooting the shit. Like that mm-hmm. to me feels much more organic, authentic, and it's easier. And people feel that, you know, they want to have a good time. And that's kind of how I like my business. So if I can stay in touch with them, and then they know what I do. You know, I do my best to stay top of mind through social media. But it really is the face-to-face things, going to events, and just, I mean, look at just us reconnecting at the wedding, which was a blast. That to me is how, again, I personally choose to grow my business. It may be a little bit slower than somebody else who wants to get on the phone and make calls for 8 hours. I don't think there's really anything wrong with either or. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's just, again, my dad's background of being in general construction. I watched when 2008 hit. He was slower. He was a slower build, but he never stopped working through that time where so many businesses went under. He just kind of had this slow and steady growth. And he had referral business until he retired. He's retired and he still gets calls. He's trying to say no. So for me, again, that's kind of watching that was really was really instrumental in the way of, okay, how do I want to structure my business? Because everybody is very quick to say, well, I did it like this, so you must do it like that. And over the years working for other agents, I learned where I was like, no, I need to stop listening to the voices and really just find out what works for me, what works for my clients. I know what I'm willing to put in, and it's very long-term. Everything I do is long-term. It's not that short fix, which unfortunately so many people do think it's just going to come quickly, and yeah. It doesn't.
I've been out of sales for quite some time now, and I truly miss it. I'm not going to lie. I absolutely miss it. And I love the kill. I got them, you know, I got them a sign. I got them what they want. It's their business name. It's in lights. They're all proud, stoked, and to have them that come to fruition, I love that.
Yes.
The money really is secondary. At the beginning, when I was 20, trying to scratch out a living, 100% it was the money. But as I've matured and gotten older and I'm not living paycheck to paycheck anymore, it's like, I just love the kill. I love to do that. One of the things that I actually truly miss, if I were to do something again or, you know, sell the software company or whatever I did in the future in life, I think I would go back into sales because I really dug the relationship and going through it. And there are still people that I talk to that were my clients 23, 25 years ago and the relationship. And it's just, for me, every single time you do what you say you're going to do, then they don't have to worry. And for me, I always try to take something off their plate. You know, you don't need to worry about that's my job. I will handle that. Here's the answers. I will take that off your plate. I will do the answers. And when my customer look at it and go, oh, wow, he's doing all this work. I don't have to. Oh, you mean I just sign on the dotted line? This is great. I'm working with this guy all the time. And for me to take those worries off their plate was the golden rule for me. That's Absolutely. How I made it niche. And I don't think that's going to be the same answer for every single person across the board. Of course, it's a good way, but you have to find your niche. And that's what you're kind of coming to the conclusion of. This is my niche. This is how I do things. And I think every single person has their own niche. I don't think there is just one path to success. You know, one of the things I've noticed throughout all the years and all the interviews I've had here is everybody has a different way of doing it. And as long as they keep going and stopping and saying, woe is me, and looking at, you know, looking over the fence, oh, the grass is green on the other side. No, it's not greener. He's in a different walk of life. That's why it's greener. It has nothing to do with your walk of life. And I see that so much in society and our industry is, you know, they keep looking over the fence and going, oh, I'm not doing good enough. You are. Chill out. Relax.
And social media has made it so much worse, too, because there's always a shiny object. There's the shiny object syndrome, and even more so now when, I mean, real estate in particular has gotten a lot tougher this last year and a half. So for so many people, they are looking at, okay, well, how do I pivot? Well, if I join this group, they're going to offer this, but then you're going to go there. And then are you happy you're in a large group because you're a solo? Mm-hmm. So it is really just focusing on, like, the more you can get centered of really truly what your mission is, what your end goal is, you're not going to get as distracted by these one-offs where everybody is going to promise you something. It'll be like that forever. I mean, the algorithms are going to, you look at one little book or script or anything like that, and it's like, come to our event. And you're going to get that 50 different times. So it's a matter of really just canceling out the noise. And the sooner you can do that and just find your lane, then when all these things come, it just becomes a like, no, I already know my goals. I know what I need to do. I need to just get to the basics and help and serve. And this is, and like you said, that money comes second. I can't tell you how many agents I talk to that are like, I can't wait to be a millionaire and I'm going to drive a Rolls Royce and this and that, where it's like, you want to support them and you're like, hey, whatever gets you out of bed and keeps that motivation going. However, you're missing the mark. When you serve people, when you learn the material, then you're able to serve. Like you said, getting out there and saying, hey, I'm going to take care of this for you. Hey, I can anticipate they're going to have a question. So I'm going to give them a booklet of saying, hey, when you have a question, here's that. So because how many times I have clients call and say, this is a stupid question. And I'm like, don't feel bad. You've never done this. The expectation is not for you to know everything. That's why you have me. Mm-hmm. And so really just being able to accompany them, serve them, and have it be a good experience where you're taking things off their plate, where at the end, they're like, I don't know how we did this without you. Then the money comes.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. No, it's going to flow in droves.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. When they finally have a position where they can go to and they feel comfortable. And I guess that's the first thing too. For me, it was a get to know you. And at the time I used a boatload of different psychology tricks. I really did. From the reverse psychology of, hey, this is an interview for me too. I may not want to take you on as a client. Like, what do you mean you don't want me? And I'm like, ah, sucker, got you. You know, and there are times I'm like, well, you may not be ready for this house, but maybe you can get this house and it's going to be a faster stepping stone to the second house. And I kind of would play the game and the cards and whatnot according to him. Now I just listen. And I'm like, hi, tell me what you want if the world was perfect. And they go, oh, well, I would want. And I go, okay, now let's sprinkle reality in here. I'm not going to douche on your dreams here, but just sprinkle reality a little bit. Okay, where are you really going to be? And it's so funny. When I got rid of all my little tricks and just listened, it became a lot easier. And I think that's another thing that we see on the social media stuff. Like, here's 15 ways to land somebody. Here's 10 ways to do this. And I'm like,
Or some of these events where you have 400 agents and you get a piece of paper of exactly, you know, are you available Monday at 2 p.m.? And have this one page script like this is supposed to work for all these different clientele. You're kidding yourself. Yep. And this person's making money off selling this dream. Now, can it help some people? Of course. But that's where, like you said, it is game changing when you know your material and you sit down and you say, you tell me. Oh, you're trying to downsize. Oh, you have this going on and this going on and this going on. Now I can problem solve off your specific situation versus just trying to like, okay, what did that script say? What did that script say? People feel it. People aren't stupid.
Yep.
And that is just where so many of these agents are like, well, I'm doing the script. I'm calling these people. I'm one of 50 agents they just called. To me, I'm like, I'm not trying to just be in the same pond as everybody else. I'm going to sit here and try and go the opposite direction and be different and show them where it's like, no, I did listen to you. I did listen that your favorite candy bar is Butterfinger. So at closing, that's going to be in a basket for you because it's, you know, or you're so excited that you have a pool at your new condo. Your kid's getting towels and we're going to do some fun stuff because it's the personal part of it. That's my favorite. I just love houses as well. And then I know how to run a business. And so that structured and that time management, that all comes with time, but it still is a personal business. And these, you are dealing with the biggest transaction of people's lives.
So, very much so.
So to think you're just going to come in and say, hi, let me sell your house and I'm going to get a $20,000 paycheck. And then you're just not going to talk to anybody. Realistically, how successful do you think you're going to be long-term?
Yeah, no, they're going to be shot. That's what's going to happen. Over time, they're going to fail. They're going to go by the wayside and nothing's going to happen. You know, we bought this commercial property. It was $2.4 million. We did $850,000 worth of TIs. And at the same time, we bought a 45-door apartment complex in West Virginia. The West Virginia one was more expensive than this one. And I barely talked to anybody because I went through a property manager that put the whole deal together.
Okay.
And I just wrote a check and said, here you go. And she says, cool, you own this apartment complex. And I said, great. Meanwhile, this one that I'm living in had all the emotional baggage, problems. I'm going to be here. What about this building? What that's on? And I just wrote to them. I said, what's the vacancy rate? And they're like, oh, you're 82%. You know, people are in it and you have a, you know, 18% vacancy rate. I'm like, oh, okay, thank you. I don't even look at it. And I start laughing at that. And as you're talking now, I'm laughing over emotional when you're there, numbers when it's not. And it really is a big line. It's a big defining line.
Absolutely. But, and then look, if you moved your whole family into that apartment building, do you feel like you would have spent a little more time? Like
100%.
Where are the schools? What's around us?
Yeah.
But if it's just strictly a financial thing, which again, there's nothing wrong with that. That's my goal has been investing and my husband and I own a couple doors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is true where it's like, okay, I'm able to kind of shut that off. And now it's like, we're doing this for a purpose. This is all financial and the numbers have to make sense. We're putting our risk in that. And so we want to see the residual income from that. But otherwise, then it is. And that's a balance too of just turning it off, but then also being very, very empathetic to other people who are struggling. I talk people off a ledge every single day. I mean, it is just, it's part of it, you know?
During your real estate classes, you become a shrink.
Yeah. Oh, among many other things. But yeah, I've been a gardener. It's just like, you name it. But you do what you have to do to get the job done. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of it I also think people don't understand is we live in this world where we're kind of used to being told what to do and our next move and our next thought and all these things being kind of driven into us where it does take effort and time to really like, no, I'm going to think outside the box. I'm going to be creative. And it's a challenge for a lot of people to switch into that, especially, I mean, I've had 8 to 5 jobs. And so it is when you get into this where you're like, okay, so someone tell me what to do. And then they're like, well, you have to kind of create this and wake up every day. And you mentioning the kill, I mean, you wake up every day and it's a hunt. Every single day it's a hunt. You get a deal and it closes in 30 days. You're unemployed again after on day 31. So it is you wake up and it is a matter. And it's important to get aligned with good people too, because it does become very overwhelming. And that's personally why I feel the success or the failure rate is what it is because they're either not aligning themselves, they're with a right team lead, or they're looking at shiny objects where they're like, okay, well, I went here, but now somebody's promising this, where it's like, no, you have to just dig your feet in and really do your best to align with somebody that's going to have your best interest at heart.
There's so much to uncover there. I'm trying to not turn this into a 5-hour podcast.
I know, and I'm good at rambling. So yeah,
that's a good, I love it.
It's a big part of it.
Not only is it a big part of it, but throughout all of this, we keep hearing the underlying, do what you say you're going to do. Get it done when you say you're going to do it. And I always laugh. I just had this conversation with my son. And I said, hey, under promise and over deliver. He goes, what does that mean? And I said, okay, fair question. You know, you're still a teenager. And I said, you're the one that's going to put a noose around your neck. Nobody else does that. They're literally going to say, when can I expect this? That you can say 2 weeks. Now that noose is 2 weeks long. You can say the next 8 hours. They have an 8-hour noose around your neck. It's up to you. And it blows my mind in every industry known to man how many times people shoot themselves in the foot and overpromise.
We see it all the time.
Yeah. It just, no matter what, they have ultimate control. They have 100% control of this. And yet they put their head right into the noose and say, I will do it. And the neck's going to snap. Game over. You shot yourself in the foot. You killed yourself when you didn't have to. And so with that in the real estate world, especially with being such a slow burn, you know, you want a pack of gum. What do? You go to the store, you buy a pack of gum. That whole transaction lasted 30 seconds, maybe a minute tops. With real estate, 45, 60, 90 days. You're with them for the long haul. During that time, what are some of the tricks that you do to make sure that they're still engaged? They haven't lost it. They haven't gone away. You know, how are you keeping them engaged in not such a manner where they get tired or they get overstimulated?
I do my best at the beginning to really lay out as much as possible of what they can anticipate. And depending on what the market is, you know, like let's take the pandemic, for example, things were flying off the shelf. So really diving in deep and understanding your market is crucial, because I'm able to say where somebody's like, you know, yeah, we're kind of serious, but we just kind of want to see. And I'm like, okay, I appreciate that. I respect that. It's not the market for you right now, because right now we're looking at about an average day of 3 days on the market. So if we see something, you guys really have, we have to be at 110 miles an hour right now. And it's unfortunate. I know it's not the easiest, but I want to set you guys up for success. And so if that's the case where it's, you know, if a house goes on the market, you like it, I say we work as a team. You see it. And if I'm out doing showings and I don't see it, text me, Krista, let's go check this out. I'm going to make myself as available as possible, because we need to basically see it that day, make a decision, write an offer the next day. And some people will. It scares them. And it's like, that's okay. This is the current market we're in right now. You guys ultimately will make that decision, but this is where we're at. Versus now a market like actually today, now we're seeing high prices. We have about a 7% interest rate. And there is a little bit more wiggle room. Our days on market are a little bit higher. And so that is kind of like, okay, well, now we can, you know, breathe a little bit easier. But, you know, you have high prices and high rates. So now the focus is like, are you okay with that payment? And then let's say that they just see houses over the next couple of months. I do that search, and then I always will do my best to like, okay, hey, let's regroup. Because, or if they say, hey, I absolutely need a pool, and then the next four houses they send me don't have a pool, that's kind of where it's not being super pushy, but if then they kind of are like, well, it doesn't have a pool, where it's like, okay, let's regroup. It sounds like we're getting kind of off track here, because I want to make sure, just like you mentioned, the funnel is that we're working towards a goal, because people do get burnout. It's, you know, if you've seen 20 houses and nothing seems like a fit, and it's, you know, it's hot outside and it's expensive and I just don't know if it's for us. And these are very, very normal conversations. So it's really just keeping them engaged. I'm their cheerleader, and it's regrouping of, hey, we've seen 10. So it seems like, you know, something's off. Are you open to condos? Maybe should we open up the range a little bit more and try some different areas? Have you guys considered this? Do we have different options with your financing? Maybe we can squeeze money. Can you get a gift from grandpa who's loaded in another state who wants to help out? Mm-hmm. It's really just trying to be as creative as possible and keep them engaged. And sometimes they do. They're like, you know what? This is too much. And it's really just asking the right questions to figure out what their end goal is. If it's, you know, if they can afford a $4,000 mortgage and everything you're looking at is $5,500 and their rent is $2,000 and they're sitting pretty, maybe it's not the right time. And yep. And that's where some of these realtors really get a bad rep, because they'll be, oh no, you know, they're after that money. So they're, well, no, you don't want to rent. You don't want to rent. Where it's like, you're not after their best interest. Yeah. Maybe it's not the time. So let's put a placeholder on it. And I'm going to revisit this in 6 months to 12 months. If there's an interest rate where now you will be ready to go in, is that something you want me to reach out? And then I just make sure that follow-up is there so we can dive back in and they can feel confident in moving forward.
You know, as I'm listening to you say this, I'm realizing that your job's a lot harder than my job when I'm selling signs, because signs are completely custom. They're completely one-off. So all I have to do is find the perfect sign and then design it for them and gone. Now, if I design them 20 different designs, just like you give them 20 different houses, they're going to be so overwhelmed that's game over for them. But it's not like you can put a little, you know, 3D printer and build the house that they want and go, here you go.
I wish. Can you make that?
Yeah. How much easier would your life be? You want what and what? Here you go. You know, where I got to do that in the signage world, I was like, okay, here's the building. Here's my parameters. What's your logo look like? Pop, 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 pop. And here's a picture. So with one or two design changes, I'm done. You're playing perfection. You got all your little shapes and you're trying to put them right in a little hole in the given amount of time period. That's a lot harder. The more I'm listening to you, I'm like, God, real estate's a little harder than it was selling signs.
And you got to manage expectations, because you want to be a cheerleader, but also there's plenty of people that are unrealistic with what they want. Mm-hmm. And it's not that it's wrong or right. It's just, You've got to be that level-headed person that says, hey, you know, I know you want essentially this move-up property, but if this is your first property, it's not realistic. And I don't want you to get defeated, but this is more of a stepping stone, especially when our median house price in San Diego is $1 million.
That's insane.
Don't insane. Knock yourself for struggling to purchase a house, especially here in San Diego. I mean, it's just, so that is the managing the expectations of, yeah, maybe you don't want a condo, but let's look at that price point. If that fits, that works, that payment is okay. And maybe that's okay. Maybe this is a 2 to 5 year plan. And then always, you know, the market fluctuates, but San Diego, historically, we're always going up. If you look at the prices in the 90s and everyone's like, well, it was a 15% interest rate. Okay, well, the median house price was also like $160,000. So there is so much opportunity here if people but are willing to go out on a ledge, but it is difficult. It is not an easy thing. So that's where, again, it's just managing those expectations and being real. When I was newer, I was so scared of losing the deal that I just was like, yeah, no problem. Yeah, okay. And then over time, I learned that that doesn't help anybody because we're wasting time. And when you become very conscious of your time and your business and scaling, it becomes of like, maybe this isn't a fit. So let's really regroup again. And that's why I do that, because it shows me that, okay, are they open-minded to change? And if they're, this is what I want and this is the only thing, then it's like, okay, I know where they stand and I still will do everything I can to help them, but it may be a fit, it may not. They may have to, again, put a placeholder on it and come back to it.
One of my tactics that I love to do was to tell the client, no, they didn't need a sign. They're like, well, I want to spend money. I'm like, you don't need a sign. It's not going to bring any value to your bottom line. And they're like, what? And now all of a sudden I was not an adversary, but I was on their same team. And so if you're like, you don't really need this house, just for why? Keeping up with the Joneses, what's going on? Anytime I could say no, oh man, now we're on the same team. And it just really made my life a lot easier for the rest of the sale.
Because then they dig deep and they go, no, but I want it because I want the school district. And then it's like,
okay.
Okay.
My kids go to private. I don't have to worry about the school system. I'm driving to wherever I want them to go. I don't need to worry about that. You know, there's different avenues too, what they think about. I have seen this happen. So I'm going to put you on pause. So this is not Krista saying this, but for the people that are looking for houses for residential, commercial, anything, you can change the color of the walls. I just want to let you guys know that you don't have to live with the color of the walls of the house you bought. And if you don't like the bathroom, you can redo it. I'm just letting you guys know that public service announcement, you know, just helping you guys out, blows my mind. So when I bought my house 7 years ago, 64 people were at the open house. It was nuts to butts. Everyone was in and out. I was like, oh my God. We were the only offer on Monday. We were the only one. And I was like, that's a really nice house. What's the problem? The problem was, is the master bedroom was 15 by 30, 15 feet wide by 30 feet long, and had an 8-square-foot bathroom. And they're like, the bathroom's too small for a master bath. And I'm like, cut the bedroom in half and make this beautiful walk-in and no one could see it. And we are the only ones, we're the only offer. So we got accepted. That's how I landed that house.
You know what? We have such a similar story too. Back in 2017, we were looking at a house. It was our move-up property. So we had sold our first house. We were renting with some friends. And then about 6 months later, my husband was like, we're going to go check out this Spanish style house. And I was like, Spanish style, that's not really my favorite, but okay. And he goes, well, I really like it because it has a granny flat on the property and I want some residual income. And so I said, okay, well, you need a realtor to show you it. So I guess here we go. And it was in an area we really hadn't even considered before. But so I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to try and, you know, poke holes in this and whatever. And sure. So we get there and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in love with this place. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess we're living here now. And there was no offers. It had a granny flat. And then the price point, it was still scary for us. It's scary for everyone the day you buy. And so it was kind of like, okay, let's do this. And it actually, the biggest thing, it's so the main house is a little over 2,600 square feet. It was the same thing. Our master is big. The master bath is tiny. And for us, I was like, it's weird, but it's okay because we were buying the property as a whole. Mm-hmm. And we knew our goal was to get that residual income. And we had a house we could grow a family in as well. It had 4 beds, 3 baths. So I was like, that was great for us. We moved forward on it. And I cannot tell you how many times somebody has said, you guys are so lucky. Like, how did you find this place? And it was like, it was just sitting on the market. Nobody wanted it. We got, I think, 20,000 off the asking price. And it was like, knowing when to move forward is crucial. And it is. And I know it's common, but when people say like, you're so lucky, it's like, it was terrifying back then just because the dollar amount has changed over the last 7 years.
Yeah.
It still was terrifying, but we made the move because we knew what our end goal was and we weren't as scared to pull the trigger when the time came. And it was on a busy road. So between certain things where I was like, I know this is less appealing to other people. Now, is it great hearing road noise? No, but I have 55% equity in my property already. So it's like, yeah, you can kind of weigh out those things. So
100%.
I'll personally always just tell clients, like, we want to focus on the things you cannot change. Mm-hmm. Does it have a view? Is it in the school district you need? Things like that. Like, is it on a road? These are things that we cannot change. But thank you for the PSA because it is. And you're so emotionally connected. And that's where it is like, oh my God, I hate the color red. The living room's red. And it's like, that is the least of the concern.
That's $100 and 6 hours of your time.
Yeah, you're in a school district you love. You have all the bedrooms and baths, and you know there's an opportunity for you to make something of this. We don't want to get caught in the weeds, but that is where that management comes from. And it works, you know, and then there are some people that are very stuck in their ways, and they're like, this isn't for us. And then it's like, okay.
I just giggle over that. I've never heard so many silly comments. I'm not going to buy this house. I don't like the toilet. That's a $300 change. You know, the paint on the walls, it blows my mind. I don't know if you ever saw our house on day one when we bought it. But over half the property was undeveloped.
And no, I didn't.
Yeah, when I got there, actually like 60% was undeveloped. So this house had been there for over 50 years on an acre of land. And it was still completely native soil, native land, native bushes. And I'm like, really? This thing is a gem. And I'd say 85% of the vision of what the house is today. And came out pretty good. You were there for the wedding.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And it came out great. And that was just, we just saw the vision. And that's what I think people miss, you know, and that's one of the things that I was excited to have you come on the podcast for, because in the end, you see the vision of what they need to. In the science world, we see the vision of what happens. Software world, we see the vision of what it could be. And everybody needs to stop taking it for face value. It's this or nothing. It's the foundation. That's all it is. It's the bare bones. It's the framing. Past that, you can do whatever you want with it and make it epic. You know, I've seen so many people, they look at it, what they have, and go, oh, it's this or nothing. And it's not that case.
And in the meantime, now you've missed an opportunity where now you could potentially have $300,000 to $400,000 in equity if you could have looked past that. And it's challenging for me. I think that's actually one of the more challenging parts for me, because I've been on the other side of it where they're, you know, we're terrified of the mortgage, or we, you know, it's too many updates or things like that. That I've been on the other side. I've walked through that and I empathize because I understand how scary it is in the moment. But coming out on the other side of it and being like, now all those updates were done over the last 7 years, I was able to just plug away and save up and kind of do these projects. And now I have equity, and now I'm in a place where I'm not worried if a landlord's going to come tell me tomorrow that I have to uproot my whole family because I'm in a rental, or, you know, or just be struggling where it's like, oh my gosh, rates are this and mortgage prices are this, and it's, we've got to sell this. You know, it's, I like to live my life on the offense. Mm-hmm. And that's just where I think real estate just, I truly, truly believe in it, is you're taking control of your destiny. When you own something, it is putting you so much further ahead than just, you know, waiting for life to happen. And again, you're going to be at the mercy of a landlord. You're going to be a landlord or a tenant. And that's what I always say. And I choose to be a landlord.
No matter
how difficult it is to get into a place.
100%. I mean, my first house I bought when I was 24. My first six pack of beer that I bought, I was 19, had a buddy buy it for me. My second pack of beer was when I turned 21, because I could. My third pack of beer was when I was 24. I didn't drink. That was a luxury. That was like owning a Rolls Royce for me as a six pack of beer. I'm like, I can't afford that. And I was stockpiling all that money trying to buy my first house. And I just knew I had to be a landlord. And you had to have my own place that I called my own, that no one else could control. And that was like my first thing. And then thank God, because I bought my first condo and it was $210,000 for an 800 square foot condo. And I remember I did the math and I had like $20 extra my monthly strokes. Oh, I had nothing. Like, we were clipping coupons. I mean, it was, I mean, I cannot believe the bank loaned us the money, to be dead honest with you. It was back then when they were giving ARM loans.
I was going to say, like, is that 2007 sounds like?
2004. Okay. It was 2004. So pretty much they were just giving loans away whenever. I mean, I was looking at the paperwork. I'm like, I would not give me a loan. I think I'm going
to
fail.
They've tightened it up if anyone's trying to get away with that.
Yeah, one. Right. And it was the best thing I ever did. That literally launched me to my second home, my third home, my fourth home, and now my rentals, just off of that move. Biting the bullet and do it.
But it's so much easier to look at your 24 or 34 unit?
46.
46 unit.
Mm-hmm.
And say, that was really like, wow, he's lucky. When all of that, all of the niches in the belt were done prior to.
Yes.
And that's just really what I do my best on educating people is, it is, you are not running. You're not going to start running. You have to learn to walk first.
Yes.
You've got to kind of like... Our first house, we bought it for 2000. It was in 2012. We bought it for $295,000. It was a 3-bed, 2-bath. And we had roommates the entire time we lived there. Is that ideal? Absolutely not. I mean, they were our good friends and it worked out, but it helped us because it was the same thing of like, this is what our goal is. And we're going to fill up those rooms and, you know, just live with it. And we did that and we got 50% equity in there. We had a number where we're like, if we could sell for this amount, we're going to sell. We got that on, we saw it and then we're like, okay, we're selling, got that, rented. And then again, took another huge leap. We're terrified. I mean, the first couple of months, it was like, we didn't have the granny flat rented out. There were some updates that did need to be done around the property. Putting stuff on credit cards. I mean, even my mom's like, what did you do? You're like way over your head. And I'm like, oh my God, what did we just do? And now again, 7 years in, we now have, you know, two rental properties, most of our mortgages being offset. And this is giving us the opportunity to save for apartment buildings and things like that to help. So that when we do have children, that's a goal of mine, is using this staircase and all these decisions so that when we do have children, I can really spend as much time as possible with them. That's, you know, our personal goal.
And I have to say this, and I already know the answer, but I'm going to say this out loud so the rest of us can hear. Would I have taken a picture of me clipping coupons to put on social media? Absolutely not. Would you put on social media, here are my roommates so I can make the rent? We wouldn't have put that on social media. We would have posted a picture of us going to the beach. We would have posted something else, but you wouldn't have posted all the struggles it gets to say, hi, I'm successful now. You know, they don't show the struggles.
Absolutely.
I really wish that when I see these people, and they, you know, they're sitting on a Lamborghini, like, oh, I've made it. I'm like, okay. How rough was it? One of the pictures I love about Elon Musk was he was sitting in a repair yard at a salvage yard pulling parts out of a BMW to fix his window so it would roll up and down again. There's a picture of him taking his BMW apart and ruining it. You just see the look in his face. He goes, I don't have the money for this, so I'm in a salvage yard fixing this. You know, and it's what it takes, the delayed gratification. And that's one of the things that if anybody takes anything away from this podcast, the grind is going to be worth it. I promise you. Don't give up too early. I mean, I remember year 5 and 6 of Square Coil. I can't tell you how many times I was going to close the doors, close them up. I was just like, this is never going to happen. This is never going to take off. This is ridiculous. I'm beating my head against the wall. And all that doubt came into, and it's a multi-million dollar company now, and it's cruising on its own, you know, and it's just something that people forget. They forget those reasons of why it takes that grind.
And you owe it to yourself to see it through, because now you're able to hire people so that they can put food on the table. And it's, if you're creative and you have a dream and you have a passion for something, you just have to cancel out the noise and just know. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of it, there is going to be challenges. That's how you get through it. You have to fail fast. Fail fast, figure out what you've done, turn around and keep at it. And there's days where, you know, there's days it even takes out on me where I'm like, okay, I need a mental health day. I need to just go drive down by the beach or, you know, grab a drink with a girlfriend and just kind of vent and do my thing. But it's like, okay, the next day, get back up.
And, you know, it's funny. That's what I've had a couple podcasts on this account of your accountability partner. And sometimes it's your spouse. Sometimes it's not. And that's fine. I'm not getting into that world. But you have to have an accountability partner that you can A, vent to, and B, take criticism from and say, how am I going? How am I changing? And those accountability partners are worth their weight in gold. You know, I have my buddy, Andy. You guys just listened to him last week talking finance. Mm-hmm. I talk to that man every single day. And I share my failures. I share my wins. And he does the same thing. And then on the failures, we talk it through. And I go, okay, what'd you do? I already know the answer. I screwed up. I zigged when I should zag. Okay, well, you know. All right, good. Or he goes, I have no idea why I screwed up. I mean, I did that last week. I forget the reason why I was – a client got mad at me, and I couldn't figure out why, because I was doing all the best things. I was giving him the best advice, helping him through it, and I didn't understand what was wrong. And at the end of the day, he goes, did you listen? I said, no, they told me the problem in the email. He goes, but did you listen when they picked up the phone? I was like, no, because we had to cross that bridge. He goes, yeah, they wanted to vent again. They wanted you to feel the pain again. And I was like, that's where I screwed up. And so having that accountability partner when you do get your butt kicked on a serious notion is to talk to somebody about it and say, hey, help me here. What happened?
And we're so in our heads that when you hear it from somebody else, I had a mentor and he is absolutely wonderful. I'm still friends with him to this day, but I really looked up to him. Well, him and I have very similar personalities and we're just chatty, 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 chatty. So he would tell me, and he had more business. I remember this was a couple of years ago where he had a listing he was going after. He was so excited for it. And then he was like, I didn't get it. And I thought I had it in the bag and I'm so confused. And so he's like, I called and I said, what did I do wrong? Why did you go with somebody else? And they said, you didn't listen. You interrupted my wife 3 separate times. You weren't listening to what we were really wanting. He goes, I was okay with you, but he's like, I felt that you were not respecting my wife in that moment because she was trying to tell you something and you just couldn't listen. And you could see how deflated he was, but even having an accountability partner in that sense where it was like, I didn't have to go through that pain, but it also was like, he's been there, done that. And I just watched him lose and I'm very similar to him. So how can I remember I need to say what I need to say and I need to shut up. And that's the beauty of having people that are further ahead in their business. Link up with those people, do anything you can, mm-hmm. because they're going to help you kind of navigate past some of these mistakes and everybody makes them. So it's just, if you're with these right people or you have an accountability, that's like, you already know. And it's just either solidifying the fact that it's like, no, I already know what I need to do. I already know what the right thing is. I need to get up and do X, Y, and Z. I'm not here to feel bad for myself. I know why I'm doing this. And also the other note of it is gratitude. I mean, to really be we get to be in these beautiful spaces and meet all these very intelligent people and learn and thrive. And as entrepreneurs, I mean, there's nothing worse personally for me than just sitting, listening to somebody tell me what to do. It drives me nuts. I have been that way my whole life. I don't like to be micromanaged. I was always in trouble for talking in school. I just wanted to be creative and I wanted to do what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And when you really listen to that, it's putting yourself in a place where you have like-minded people. Because when I'm talking to a bunch of people that absolutely love the 8-to-5, they love the structure, of course they're going to have negative things to say. We don't think the same. And so it's really, really important that you can, you know, somebody can keep you accountable, not just be yes man. You don't want yes man in your life, because I have tried to do that to save my emotions, and they don't move the needle forward for you.
Yep.
I'm the honest friend. If somebody knows, like if they have a question, they know they may not like the answer. Like, don't ask me that, because I'm going to be that person that's going to be very honest. So it's helped me, but really just being around people who are just going to encourage you or say, you're better than that. I know you're frustrated right now, but there's no reason for you to give up. Remember why you started this. You're passionate and you have every reason to keep moving forward.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Well, it has been an absolute honor talking with you. This has been a blast. When I brought you on, I was like, I just want to talk to you in an interview. And I had no idea where the conversation was going to go. I just wanted to have you on the show. So thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's always great talking to you.
All right. Thank you guys. And we'll talk to you next week.